time that everyone can share themselves, if you don't mind. I think that's better for you, then you don't have to say next slide, next slide, next slide. I don't think we should spend a lot of time. So we have today, we have first two talks about learning from the history, like how was the previous ones designed for the rest of the detectors. And then we will go more and more in things that we need for future. And we have several blocks where we discuss whether or not we need an FD that's sent for Joanna to speak up. Okay, but we start first with the history. So maybe Bruce, you can start right away. And if you prefer, I can share slides. But
Let me see if this works. Let me see. Maybe it would be full screen. Can you see the full screen? Is that okay? Yep.
Very good.
Okay, thanks. So this is a very brief summary. I'm glad it's brief because I don't remember everything that happened. This is the situation at the time of the design report, the first version of the design report back in the late 1995. This was just before the site selection was made. But already at that time, OJ was a hybrid detector, surface detector plus fluorescence detector, which was very good. And already we had in mind that the fluorescence detector should only view 30 degrees of elevation. Stereo was not a priority, actually, because hybrid geometry was thought to be very good, and the stereo didn't actually come into the optimization. So we had these three possible arrangements for 3,000 square kilometers, the various arrangements of the possible eyes, fluorescence detectors, Cyclops, MasterCard, and Superman. And what we were doing was trying to optimize the number of sites we needed based on this equation here for signal to noise, where A is the area of the telescope and omega is the solid angle of a pixel. So the optimization was basically looking at the required signal to noise and weighing that against the cost of mirrors, pixels, electronics, and site preparation. And here we assumed that we had perfect knowledge of the atmosphere. And the optimization resulted in the optimum number of sites being less than 1.5. So this is where the Cyclops idea came in as being the reference design in the first design report. So that had 48 telescopes, very large mirrors, 1 degree pixels, 15 degrees by 15 degrees camera, and 10,800 channels. About 18 months later, the second edition of the design report came out. And by that time, we weren't so confident that we knew the atmosphere well enough for the Cyclops to be a safe option. So because this is the Cyclops up here, and actually the diameter of this circle is sort of three times the atmospheric attenuation length. So a safer option was either this one here, the Superman, or this one here, the hexagon. They're actually equivalent in area and actually the same number of telescopes. And their performance, the Superman and hexagon through simulations, were very similar. They're less far-sighted telescopes, so 1.5 degree pixels, bigger pixels, same size camera, but only 1.5 meter diameter mirrors. 135 telescopes, actually, a lot of telescopes, and 16,000 channels. And this is the idea of a single unit which would cover 30 degrees by 30 degrees of sky. The bigger pixels, 1.5 degrees versus 1 degree, was seen as a good thing, actually, because there are fewer boundary crossings. But the density of pixels was still sufficiently good to get a good shower detector plane. Now, this was more expensive than the Cyclops because it had essentially more channels. But it was a safer option in terms of the atmosphere. And then evolution of the design in the last couple of years of the 90s, the major innovation was the Schmidt optics. So instead of having 15 degree by 15 degree cameras, we could go to 30 degree by 30 degree cameras with equal pixels. All pixels had the same sort of spherical aberration. We reduced comb aberration enormously. With bigger fields of view for the cameras, we could reduce the number of telescopes by a factor of four, but that wasn't a cost saver since the mirrors have to be four times larger in a Schmidt system. But it was great for data quality. And then we had to take notice of the real site. And so having a central eye like the hexagon array, for example, was difficult. We tried this option here, the Koyeko option, and this option called the Pantillo option to see what the best arrangement of eyes was. I mean, we wanted elevated positions for the fluorescence detectors because that minimizes the problems with the aerosol boundary layer and fog. But unfortunately, there was no obvious position for a central fluorescence detector. So we went to this familiar picture on the right-hand side where we had four elevated sites around the edge, each with 180 degree field of view, saving money actually, because there are only 24 telescopes in this system, whereas in these two systems, there would have been 30 telescopes. But we lost stereo aperture, which is sad in retrospect. But it meant with this final option that the FD cost was something like less than 50% of the total observatory cost, which was some sort of magic figure. And also that it was just difficult finding a central site that was not going to be affected too much by aerosols and fog. So that's the brief outline. I've omitted a couple of things, including what we call Plan B. Paul Summers called Plan B back in 1996, which was sort of a precursor to FAST and CRAFT, the detectors that we'll be talking about later today and tomorrow. Okay, thanks. I'll leave it there.
Okay, thanks a lot. Really useful to see what has been already tried, and we don't do it again. Is there questions from the, or you will see that some ideas are circling back.
Maybe some ideas will reoccur.
Yeah. You will see the cyclops in my talk.
So it was influenced by the actual site.
Yes.
Not yet there.
So are there questions or comments to Bruce here?
My recollection, Bruce, was that it was the Carlos Escobar who was responsible for the corrector rings. You had the Puebla group. I may be wrong, but.
I'm sorry, yeah, the Puebla group were responsible for the Schmidt telescope idea, and then Carlos Escobar was responsible, I think, for the corrector rings.
Right. Okay, so we come back to Plan B and Cyclops in a few minutes, and maybe then we hear about the telescope array. Ogyo-san, do you want to?
Yes, so I will share my screen.
Yes, please.
Is it okay?
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, so on behalf of Telescope Array Collaboration, I'm going to talk about design consideration of TA fluorescence detector. I'm Shoichi Ogyo from ICRR, University of Tokyo. TAFDs currently in operation was succeeded from the high-res experiment, and they were so our detectors were created, our detectors were created based on the specifications of Hybrid 2 experiment. So then it is similar in some parts to the OJFD. So in this flash talk, I will focus on the different points from OJFD. So, firstly, here is the first proposed design of FD stations and the station deployment for telescope array. So original telescope array, it was literally a telescope array consisting only of FDs with no surface detectors. Each station was designed to have a field of view of 3 to 34 degrees in elevation and 36 degrees in azimuthal angle. The deflectors were stuck to 2 floors high and designed to reduce land occupancy, and it means to reduce impact on the natural environment. And this is the close-up view of the FD telescope stuck 2 floors high. So I have copied down the specifications of the optics system, but the information is too detailed. So then I will skip this or to read out here. The optics system design was carried over almost exactly as it is in the current TAFDs in Black Rock Mesa station and the Long Ridge stations. And the design of the electronics has been modified to simplify it compared to the original. And it consists of the following 4 modules in one FD station. The first one is SDF, which digitizes and holds the signal from the PMTs and determine the hits at the same time. And so we call blue one is the called the TF, which determines the air shower track based on the result of the heat determination from all PMTs in one FD. And the green one is called the CTD, central trigger distributor, which collects the track determination from all FDs in one entire station to make a final event judgment and distribute data acquisition triggers and also systematic system clocks and GPS information to all FDs. And the high voltage power supply module also we have, and then the which applies high voltage to each PMT independently. So I will skip the details of the electronics. So please see the uploaded PDF for the details. And then to go to the PMT camera. So here is the close-up view of the two stacked telescopes and the camera before installation. Now each side of the camera is approximately 1 meter in size, which corresponds to the field of view of approximately 18 degrees for one telescope. The lower telescope is responsible for the upper field of view and upper telescope for the lower field of view. And the PMTs are placed so that the photo cathode of all PMT together forms a flat plane. There is no optical compensator also in front of the PMTs. Only the UV transparent acrylic plate is mounted as a window. And the lower left photo is the close-up image of the two PMTs. The photo cathode is hexagonal and the bandpass filter called BG3 is attached. And we are not using a Mercedes reflector. So we will try to build a prototype and shown in the photos and evaluate its performance. But we decided not to use it because of high voltage is applied near the reflector since the negative voltage is applied to PMTs. And we are concerned about the keep the reflectance of the reflector to stable. And the incident angle of the photons on the PMT is very large. So then the lower left photo is a close-up image of the high voltage divider circuit and the preamplifier also mounted on this board. And the right figure is the diagram of the circuit. So we are using the Zener diode in the high voltage divider in order to keep the constant voltage between the electrodes. Reduce the gain variation due to the large signal current. And also we are applying the negative high voltage on each PMT. So then the PMT anode is DC coupled with the preamplifier. So we can measure the DC current of the PMT output. And the final last slide is about the camera calibration. So three different calibrations are performed and as shown here. The first one is absolute calibration in laboratory. And the second one is relative calibration on site with xenon flasher, and also uniformity measurement by a large XY stage. So I have no time, so I will skip. I will finish the conclude my presentation. But I would like to show the last slide. So now I'm organizing the ICRC 2023. So the place is changed and will be we have in Nagoya, Japan. So we will meet in Japan next year. That's all, thank you.
Okay, thanks for commercial break. Thanks for the nice talk. Is there maybe one question or two? Maybe I can ask a quick one. So in Ogier, we have always this problem with the dust on the mirror and the dust on the aperture. But in the end, it seems a good idea to have a closed telescope.
Yes.
On the other hand, you have a very, you save money by you just have to filter the size of the camera. So what is your experience with this open geometry?
Yeah.
Do you have to clean it often or how do you do it? Do you get mouse and dust and all these things into your telescope?
Yeah, so our camera is covered by the acrylic plate. So the camera itself was perfectly covered. But the mirror was in open air, so then the, we needed to wash regularly. So we, the on the mirror surface, to keep the mirror condition is a little difficult, and we need work for work. So it is answer for your question.
Yeah. So would you next time close the aperture, or you think it's better like you do it?
Close the aperture. What does it mean, close the aperture?
Like we have the filter in front of the aperture.
Ah, yes, yes. You know. Yes, I know. So we have no closed aperture. So the mirrors are open air.
Okay.
Especially you would do it again that way.
Do you think this is bad? Like, you have good experiences with the setup? It's not too much cleaning needed.
Yeah. So we needed to. So you are asking about the mirror conditions about that.
Mm-hmm.
So every year, so we needed to clean up on the mirror surface.
Mm-hmm. Okay, not so much. Yeah. Okay. So thank you for that.
The hoist is like has also they accept that they have to recoat at some point. This is the other alternative.
Mm-hmm.
You don't protect it at all, and you just after N years have to recoat the mirrors.
Mm-hmm. And kind of monitor the loss.
So for our case, so during the all the time. It's okay. So, but the off season is covered by closes. Yeah. The mirrors were closes.
Look in the rain.
Yeah. It's not like this.
The building has a price and the recoating has a price. And I don't know, it's not obvious to me what is cheaper. You know, I think the Hess guys, for them, this is so big, you cannot build a house
around
this sort of thing. But I don't know, also for us, we have to at least see it. These buildings are not cheap.
And right.
Recoating is neither, but then, I don't know, you're right. In between, you have to monitor the degeneration, which is probably also not straightforward, so.
Well, we also pay a price in Auger for having the filters in a closed compartment, because first of all, we have the reflections on the inner part of the filter that kept us busy for a long time to understand and gives a point spread function that we don't like so much. Mm-hmm. And secondly, we have a dust size, the dust grains on the mirror are at the size that is very, very small, and it's also not completely favorable, I would say. So if we had the option to choose, I would not automatically know whether we want to have a closed or open telescope. Mm. Because the open one has definitely a number of benefits, not only that it's less expensive, but optically you have fewer surfaces in the path. That is an advantage.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
I was surprised you have a flat camera, so that gives you a lot of distortion at the outer side of the image distortion on the outer side of the camera. What's your experience with it? I mean, how do you cope with it in the analysis, and what the additional systematic does it give?
So I cannot understand very well about your question, but so our analysis is based on the inverse Monte Carlo. So we are using the rate for the analysis of the analysis of FD events. So for each event we generate the ray trace program. So then those kind of systematics is in. Systematic is not that does not exist, I believe.
Okay, thanks. So I think we should move on, or maybe that's already the end of this session. Wait, so there's a short discussion block, and we can come back to this tomorrow again, which is whether or not we actually need an FD. So let me share my two slides. One slide I have here. Share. And where is it? Okay, so this should be the first one. And then I guess this is more for non-FT people to speak up. But here's my few core bullet points. So something need an energy calibration for GCOS. This might be done with RP, but there we have to see whether this is possible with the spacing for this question. Now we know that we need a mass calibration. Yeah? So you might know this DNN paper from Roger, where you see that you can do a very nice mass measurement, just a walk range of detectors, but they're off by 30 grams of unknown reason, let's say. So even if you want to use surface detectors for the mass, you need to set. No, it's actually, it's max calibration would be more fair because we don't know the mass either. So someone needs to calibrate the surface detector and energy and mass. So it can maybe be done with RT, but it's max probably even harder, I guess. Huh? So we need to see whether we need this or not. One could argue that one, if you use layered surface detector things, which is moved into OG prime TA and calibrate them there. This was some option that was discussed in OG North, that you just put this single PMT tanks to it. So back then it was decided it's like Jim Cronin put it like that, for the warm feeling in the stomach, it's better to have an FD rather than to make this cross calibration. So these are all calibration issues now, and is there still something that like hybrid physics that can be done with the FD on the 10% duty cycle that cannot be done with RD, for instance? Okay, yes.
But yeah, just to get your 30 grams that you have to scale for the SD, we are speaking about results that are going to be like in 10 years from now. Do you think that this is not going to be sorted out? Because I think it's going to be already progressing in other models, right? So the simulation is the new number. Mm-hmm. But I expect that
there's going to
be lots of progress there, and also
simulations.
And understanding this
30
grams,
so
just because
the new methods that are more. The new methods, the models are wrong, correct, right? Sorry? The models are currently wrong. This is an interpretation, I think. And I don't want to put the science case on as much as I appreciate the efforts of IPOS and QGESCHET. We cannot, I don't think it's a good idea that we don't have a calibration.
Exactly, but do you need to really have calibration on site, or can you calibrate the closure? Or that's the question.
Yeah, that's the question. Exactly. I mean, if FD is relatively cheap, I think it's a good option to have it.
No, in my opinion. It's cheap.
Like if it's a tenth of the price, and not like an OG where it was like, who said it before? Like almost half, 50% of the price. Dirk?
I think I agree with you. We should not trust on this. Sorry, Kangi's not here, so he cannot leave me. Yeah. But
good, that's why we have
something independent, you know, that we have an experimental like an OG. We have the experimental basis for the energy scale. We do the fluorescence light measurements at the accelerators. Then we sort of transport it to the field and have our reference. And I think we agreed already that I think Fred said this, it's very important to have one type of detector at several sites, otherwise you get into nightmares with cross-calibrating. And I think, at least would be my personal 5 cents, there should be one site with the standard SD detector and a cross-calibration detector, be it radio or FD. And I think, you know, bringing this to somewhere else, or isn't this better, you have it on the side, because then you have all the atmospheric variations throughout the year, and you know, all the, this thing needs to be a precision machine. Huh? For Dennis, for the particle physics, we need 10% accuracy, so you need all the distortions which we have, and also for the astrophysics, we need a precision machine. So I think this, yeah, and if you do this once at another site, I think this is not sufficient. I think you need this for the measurement.
Yeah, but the heights might not be exactly the same. If you're paranoid, right?
Oh, and if you have sites of, there will be a different sea level. Yeah, there are SDs.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that the resolutions that you get with the neural networks is similar to the resolution.
The resolution, yes.
Exactly. So what you are missing is just an absolute scale.
That's right. Yes.
So that's all I was saying, that I'm not against it yet, you have to use it, but I don't, because cost is not only money, it's also human power.
Absolutely.
So that's what I'm saying, I'm not, I don't.
You get hope, you get X max and energy, that's already a good bargain. Yeah.
So what you give up definitely then with all FD is a measurement of
of X max to which you can compare models, right?
Not
So then you give up then, and energy calibration I also agree, unless I mean radio would do the job. Statistics that you then need with the fluorescence don't need to be at least as sufficiently large, so that the precision that can be done with the calibration is better than the precision, or at least at the level of the precision that you can do with the resolution of the SD. That's another point. But then again, with the mass, I was also thinking, well, in principle, we don't need to go via X max. That's in a way historic, because we measure X max as an indicator for the mass, and then calculate from the surface observables an X max value, and then we compare to models, and then we need to do this calculation. In principle, you could compare the SD observables, whatever they are, directly to models and infer the composition. However, then you don't have an absolute number, which is a clear experimental observable like X max. I mean, that's
without. One could argue that X max is easier to predict than the ground level particles.
Yeah, no, that comes in addition.
Yeah.
So, no, I'm speaking in favor of the FD.
Sure. Yeah.
So, so therefore, I think you would, I mean, I find it dangerous if you just come up with observables where you say they are, in principle, only useful if you compare them to interaction models that we don't understand well.
No,
it's
like I was thinking about radio, for example, also. So the resolution of the radio is getting really good, and we have already like something that can.
Yeah, with radio, I mean, if you can reconstruct in a geometric way, the X max, so that could be an alternative.
But I don't think that's possible to kilometer spacing or even 1 kilometer spacing.
But
okay,
then
raise the
radio.
But if we speak about a calibration array, it will be also for FD, there will be a sub area where we have FD, so of course you get a denser radio array, and then you can also do vertical showers if you need to do a one energy calibration fix. You can also discuss this in the radio part.
Yeah, right. Okay, Alan?
Yeah, thank you. It would seem to me that it would be very sensible to have a fairly decent FD at least one site. But if I understand it, I'm sorry I missed the discussions this morning, there's going to be several sites across the planet, so that cross-calibration on the same parts of the sky will be very, very useful. Another thing that slightly surprises me is that we never think of using Cherenkov light as a monitor of atmosphere. I mean, we can, obviously it's not a very good device to look at large showers, but you could look at rates, and this might be a cheap way to cross-calibrate the atmospheric characteristics of different sites.
Do you mean what the Johnny one? No, it was not as well. Muons, you mean extra low energy showers?
I mean a Cherenkov light detector looking at light coming from the sky. I mean, that's something that is clearly that the rate's going to change depending on the transparency of the atmosphere. And I think it's a cheap detector that you could use and carry around or mimic at different sites. The FD is very expensive.
You're all talking about open Cherenkov detectors or?
Yeah, open Cherenkov detector.
So Blanca or aerobic type. This is rather cheap. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good idea. Yeah. Okay. So it seems people are not super against the FD, so we can continue.
Well, we didn't hear Johanna.
Yeah. Okay. Good. So now we have two talks about the two extremes. Couldn't be more extremes. So one about a more plan B type of thing, like a fast craft type, and I will speak here about the Cyclops, if I find here this, the Cyclops design, which obviously minimizes the amount of sites that you have. Okay, so this extreme design would be one or a few 360 degree FT sites, and the major and super obvious advantage is that you have a single point of maintenance and operation, and this should not be underestimated. I think even in Auger, where we have the four telescopes, there's the one which is really far away, Los Morados, and I think it's always dirtiest, and the one which is the largest downtime, and so on. So I think this is a good thing. And obviously, if you just have one site which you equip, then or two, then you have also less equipment that you have to put there. So you can maybe allow for a more expensive apparatus if you only have one or two of them. The big elephant in the room, as was mentioned by Bruce, is the atmosphere. So there you have to add a little more money in atmosphere monitoring. But I think we know this now from OG South, how this can be done. So with a few CLFs that not only shoot vertically, but also sideways, I think we could make a really decent monitor. So in the south, the detector which we have there, we can view something like 45 kilometers or 10 to 20 electron volts. And so several of these Cyclopes were proposed for Orge North. So the design. So we tell you want to have the least overlap that you can. The things back then we didn't really try to. Well, we tried, but we didn't optimize them a lot. And what I want to show you today is basically mainly about the elevation. So these Orge North telescopes, they would have the standard 30-degree field of view and Schmidt optics. And I want to argue that if you trust that you can have a large viewing distance, then you don't need this high elevation, so that will save you a lot of money. So the ESC is just a plot where you see the vertical depth as a function of distance here, yeah? And then you can read off where you can view at a certain distance, but then you also need to take account in the slant depth. If you want to, like currently in OG at a very high energies, we require that we see at least the shore from 700 to 900 grams. So this is the absolute minimum requirement that you sample the whole max distribution. And you see, obviously, if you go to very large distances, like 50 kilometers, yeah, so you can sample here a huge vertical depth range just within. So then if you take this like really serious, so now you have just a 60-degree maximum distance fluorescence detector. And then you see the area that you can bias free view. So you have then like this donut area where the close by showers, which are in principle the good ones because they have a smaller attenuation. You're not using them, but you're taking advantage that the area grows, the radius grows like a radius. Yeah? So you have this huge area that you can view far away. And then from this, you can already see the 10-degree option looks good to me. And you can do this also for different maximum viewing ranges. And yeah? You see, like the effective area, oops, how it evolves with the upper field of view boundary. And again, you see, like this is kind of always flattening out here. And it depends on your maximum energy. Obviously, if you have a small one, maybe you want to go a little further. But for large ones, 10 degrees or even less would be just fine. So that would mean that we would, if we trusted that we can see so far. We can get rid of the Schmidt optics and build something which is like a totally different design. So we could have a Chico Cyclops that could really look far, just has a very small elevation range, a large area with very small pixels. And one of these designs is used by Nick Mugotte for his Trinity detector. It's called Machete. That does exactly that. Yeah. So this is now a skate down version. Machete was designed for another thing. So he, for his type, so it's just a stand-in, we would have to optimize this for our purpose. But so you get very small pixel sizes of 0.3 degree, and you get in every pixel can do 10 square meter of aperture. Currently in Algeria, we have 3 degree. Yeah? So if you do, Bruce showed this formula, yeah, that the signal to noise was like a square root of aperture over the pixel size. So if you just take out of the box Nepomuk's design here, we would get a factor of 9 in signal to noise as opposed to OG. If you make two of these rings that we can make a full 360-degree eye with 10-degree elevation, that would cost, according to Nepomuk, $10 million. So that would be cheaper than the total current OG, but we could view a larger area with this. And again, if you monitor it properly. And the last point, of course, you need to optimize this for our needs. What we'll also do and should check is then the dual use for also doing neutrino physics. This is what Nepomuk uses. So he's doing, it's slightly different. So he puts this on a 2-kilometer high mountain and it uses the horizon. That's why it gets as large as the funeral approach with a very high energy threshold. But if we have these FTs in our Chico site, and there's a mountain nearby, we will always look at this mountain and see if there's palm trees coming out and be able, because we have this fine pixelization. It's silicon PM, so maybe I've got to say it. So that means our duty cycle could be maybe up to 20%.
Including moon too.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And that's about it. So this dual use is something we should study as well. And, or we could then do, even if it's movable, but then it's more costly. We could target to some target of opportunity that whenever there's some transient, we move all our FTs and look at the horizon where exactly this transient was. But this would add a lot of cost, because then you have to, I mean, they are movable, but you put them down during the day, if they don't collect dust and don't reflect the sun. Yeah, so this will be one way we could do things differently than we do now. Questions?
I just have a second thought, since you were emphasizing this low elevation.
Yeah.
We were at the moment ago only focusing on calibration. But of course, for the particle physics, in the air shower physics in the atmosphere, if you have X max and calorimetric energy, you have a huge gain from FT for particle physics. Then you have the muons on the ground, because otherwise, how do you do particle physics? If you have only the muons on the ground and no second.
With hybrid, yeah.
And so then I don't know, I was just because you were repeating the low elevation angle, but of course, for understanding the shower development, higher elevation angles are an advantage. But yeah, then the question is, can you justify the money only for
why, because of the close by showers? Well, why, I don't understand, why do we need high elevation angles? Because you see how this explodes, right? So it's really, you just don't use the close by showers, but you can see.
Oh,
you're very high.
Yeah, I see the point. Yeah. You just use some more.
You just get rid of this little donut hole.
You're right. Yeah.
Okay, so then we can move on to Toshi.
Can I just make a comment?
Yeah. I didn't see. Sure.
Okay. It's an interesting idea. I do worry about a couple of things. One is the atmosphere and monitoring it sufficiently over such a big area. The other thing I worry about is you can optimize signal to noise, but you actually require signal, of course. and if you look too far away, that, you know, the atmosphere just is a bit of a brick wall after a while. I mean, and so you're talking about a very high energy threshold, right? For this sort of system, if you're going to be looking far away.
10 square meter area. This point is where taking, right, you need signal to do this. But so currently, with our FDs, so the quality distance is 45 kilometers. And we know this from stereo events that we actually control the atmosphere over this 45 kilometers. So you don't go to 100 kilometers, right? Maybe there's a misunderstanding. Maybe you go to 60 kilometers with this thing, and then you have not full coverage of one Chico site, but you have half of it covered. So then you either put two or,
I would just be interested in seeing the efficiency as a function of energy, you know, but that's something to do in the future, yeah. But anyway, it's an interesting idea. Thanks a lot. Yep.
Thank you. Okay. Toshi?
Yep. Thanks a lot, Mihail. And my apology, I cannot attend on site. So I really would like to join your discussion on site, but I unfortunately have to be the Zoom. Okay. I would like to talk about the low cost FDRI for GCOS. I'm Toshihiro Fuji at the Osaka Metropolitan University. So as you may heard, our project is getting familiar in the ultra-high energy cosmic ray field. So fluorescent detector array of single pixel telescope, so-called FAST project, we are targeted to the highest energy region above the 90.5 eV. And the current fluorescence detector is too expensive to cover the huge area. So we try to the compact optics and also few pixel telescope we developed. And I was surprised from the Bruce talk, originally that called Plan B used to be thought in the OJ team. So we are using the low-cost telescope and to see the only profile, and then reconstruct the geometry and shower profile to obtain the Xmax. And I mainly focus about our mirror in the case of the mirror, but tomorrow Tameda-san will be discuss about the craft design made by a Fresnel lens and bigger photomultiplier too. Okay, so our concept is relatively shorter distance compared to conventional usual fluorescent detector to reduce the atmospheric transparency uncertainty. So, and we are basically at the highest energy region above the 40 eV, we detect the two or three stations. And based on the information on the reconstructing by waveform of the individual trace to reconstruct the arrival direction and also geometries. And our reference design is the 4 PMT. Each peak having the 20 centimeter diameter with the aperture of the 1 square meter and shield it to avoid the dust. And enclosure to protect from the sunlight in the daylight time. And one good thing to detect the three stations is one of them should be a very bright signal because of the Cherenkov dominated signal. That bright signal, we realize that it's concentrated on the geometry. It is nice to constrain the geometry. And also another two is nicely reconstructs the profile, including the Xmax. And if we currently we installed the 500 stations, the ground coverage is gonna be the 150,000 square kilometers. And we install the telescope arrangement site in the northern hemisphere. And three telescope and one telescope and recently only optics have been installed at the OJ site. And it means that we will be capable to the cross calibration between the current observatories. Okay, and so we are starting the R&D for almost 10 years. At the beginning, we really started the one pixel using the usual PA optics combined to our PMT. And we detected the vertical laser signal and also cosmic ray. And then we installed the three telescope and two telescope on the OJ site. And we reconstructed the waveform from the real Rutherford cosmic ray. And we developed the machine learning techniques and also waveform reconstruction, so-called top-down reconstruction. That unique technique will be addressed tomorrow by Jose. And we obtain the Xmax and energy by individual reconstruction from those waveforms. Okay. And I would like to discuss some brainstorming and hopefully this is encourage the discussion what we should think the optimization of the GCOS or future ultra-high-energy cosmic ray research field. One big thing is we needed to the really huge sizable exposure to the highest energies exposure area, effective area, including the duty cycle is 30,000 square kilometer. And the current first reference design is 100% efficiency above the 20 eV. And the preliminary reconstruction resolution on the energy and the Xmax is 8% and also 30 gram per square centimeter respectively. And this corresponds to the LNA equal one is the resolution. And if we operate the 1 year, this is the detection sensitivity is 1 year is gonna be here and 10 years is gonna be there. And we are thinking the really end of the energy spectra and also expecting the 10 times statistic greater statistics to see the anisotropy search with including the Xmax. Xmax is, I believe this is robust measurement to estimate the mass composition. And I'm thinking that also it is important to install the dense SD arrays. So to search for the ultra high energy photon, so already discussed in the Marcus, and I'm thinking that region around the 1 eV is the one of the targeted position to be a possible breakthrough smoking gun of the ultra high energy cosmic ray. So, but to do it, we need to really hadron gamma separation probability. So let's say the 10 to the minus 5. And this is also important to the multi-messenger synergies. And also neutrino is important for the, this is also advantage for the FD that will be discussed tomorrow by Francesco. Yeah, that's all, thanks.
So much, questions? So maybe what people think. So if you wanted to monitor the whole Chico's area, you need something like 1,000 fast.
Yeah.
Right.
And
right. One fast is cheap, but 1,000 might not. But what is the price of one fast station?
Currently, yeah, I'm thinking the current target money is total is $200 million for the 500 station. It means the individual one is about 40k if I carry 40k US dollar. If I could correctly convert it, but now currency balance is changed. But yeah, anyway, yeah, that's kind of the target money for us. Even this is expensive, yeah. Even if the one telescope gonna be economical, total price gonna be huge, yeah.
Yeah, and you have to, what we spoke before, you have to go there every year to clean the filter. So yeah, it's one per day.
Yeah, that's right. But we are trying to the maintenance-free detectors. That's why we covered the mirror. This is to reduce the washing the mirror every year. So, but you see the accumulating the dust on the filter, that is the problematic. But currently, we are monitoring the based on the field measurement that will be saturated in the three years, and just reducing the 10% efficiency of the photons. So, and getting the stable, I believe. But we need to monitor how looks the aging of the detector. That's also important thing, yeah.
Yeah. More questions? No, then
yeah. Mika, yes. Mika, just a comment. What I like from what Toshiro has shown, and I think is very interesting, is the sensitivity at the highest energy, because this showed that so this fast project is is something that is trying to look in a region to do what we have done at the beginning of cosmic rays, looking in a region where probably you don't expect to have too much, or you have not to such chance to see something. So I think it's challenging and is interesting also for this reason to me.
Yes.
Thanks, Francesco.
Okay, thanks for coming. Then Francesco, you can
yes. I have to share or you share? This I don't get this point.
Yeah, no, I was too paranoid at the time. I think it's better than you can move.
Okay. Okay, I think you see the slide.
It's your. Huh?
Yeah, you see the full screen. Okay, so let's say an introduction or a disclaimer, if you want. What I'm going to show also on the behalf of Lorenzo are just sparse and qualitative ideas, and these ideas are basically something has been already discussed in a more qualitative way in the previous presentation, but these ideas are mainly coming from experience of running, of doing shift, of being responsible for something with DFD, and so they are just based on experience that we collect. So some idea can be naive, some idea can be. It can be very qualitative, but I think it can be a good point to start some discussion if you have time and you want. Okay, so the idea is what we want to do is to increase the performance of DFT. So basically what we need, what is the limiting factor of FT is we want to have an higher duty cycle. Okay, so one one idea for doing this could be to have to have a gain adjustment. And what is important to stress is that you cannot do this gain adjustment and then you forget about everything. Because if you do a gain adjustment, if you want to adjust this gain during the night, for example, because you want to run a different condition of background light, then you need to do a calibration before and after. Otherwise, you will not be able to follow the relative calibration of the detector. And for this reason means that if we want to think to something like this, we have to think to a dedicated calibration system that is flexible, or that I would say is more flexible than the one that that we have on the old design FD side. Another idea that we wanted to put there is the use of interference filters, and this could hopefully increase the signal to noise ratio. This can be expensive because it depends how much this filter costs. We don't have idea about the cost of this, but maybe this can be worth if you can reduce the light window without let's say reducing also the signal. And this is something that can be explored in the future. Also, other naive ideas are, for example, well, not too naive to use a SIPM, silicon PM, PMT is also, I think, it was very difficult to follow the discussion because from the people in the audience, it was a bit choppy, the sound, but I think this was discussed also by Mikkel in the Trinity design. And this has been also tested by in some way by the FD detector in LASO, and this can be cost effective, and this can also reduce the camera size. Reducing the camera size, if we stay with a Schmidt optics, is also a gain because you don't have you have a camera that is a lower dimension. Also, we can think, but this is are always sparse ideas, different design if we want to reduce the camera reflectivity, because this can cause also troubles in the reconstruction. And also maybe think about alternative optics. This, I don't know if it's possible. This is used for satellite, for EUSO and so on, but probably it's not possible on the ground, but we wanted just to say. So then we want also to extend the sensitivity. Also, these are things that everyone has thought about. So we want to extend towards the highest energy. And if we want to do this, it is obvious. We have to do a measurement that is in combination with the surface array, but which has a larger area. An idea can be also to increase the spacing of the SD detector, and this will avoid basically to limit the increase of the FD exposure with energy, because when you finish the array, then the hybrid exposure, if you think about hybrid events, this will be limited by the size of the detector. So we can enlarge the detector to cover the higher energy. And this will be interesting for mass composition studies at the highest energy, as Toshiro has already stated before. This is the dream. This is my dream when I was young. GZK spectroscopy, and then also the search for possible sources. Also, it's interesting because of multi-messenger physics and neutrino astronomy to move to the lowest energy, to the lowest energy of our energy range. And for this, we need again. For example, one possibility is to have an higher gain, so a faster electronic, and then also this in combination with a more effective noise filtering. That is what I said in the slide before. And then the last point that we don't have to forget, because it's something that worked a lot in Pinochet. This is a very interesting important point for the FD, is the atmospheric monitoring. So this has been proven, and we know that it's a very delicate point if you want to determine it in a very precise way the energy scale of the FD. So we have, we think that we have to increase our sensitivity to very low areas of content if we want to improve. We have to study better, to find a way to study better. It means that we have to put more device probably, and we have to increase the cost, horizontal uniformity of the atmosphere. And also one other possibility is to enhance the potential of the stereo design. So we know that in our case, the stereo are not so much, so we can find a way to increase the stereo. For example, what the design that Michael showed for Roche Nord, this is go into the direction to increase increase the stereo. Also, this probably will be clear tomorrow when I will do the talk on the neutrino. Also, the design that Michael showed with the cyclope design is also could be also better to increase the possibility to look for upward going events. And then we have another point that we discover also is very delicate in OJ, that is the calibration, so the absolute and the relative. One possibility, for example, could be to add a close-by laser to calibrate the FD, and if you are closer, then you can minimize the atmospheric effect. This means that you should have one of these devices for each eye. If you increase the number of the eyes, then you have to increase the number of these devices. Maybe we can think to something that also we have in OJ, that is a rowing laser. So it's a laser that is going around in the field to calibrate the detector. And then this is another thing that I want to stress. If we want to increase the 2D cycle and want to run with the night sky background, that are worse condition for the night sky background with more light, with more background light, we have to find a way to have a flexible calibration system, or if you want more flexible than the one that we had in the past, because we have to cope with a changing gain over the night. So we have to do calibration before and after. This is something that is. So I think I finished. I wanted to thank Michele Toshiro for asking for these thoughts. And also, I'm sorry that I could not be there in presence, but it's a period of exam at the university and we are all very, very busy. Thank you.
Okay, very good.
Sorry, Michele, it was very choppy.
One question I always ask me, Roger, like, what about autonomous running? And I think fast is autonomous. I think we should at some point in Roger demonstrate it's also possible with bigger detectors, right? There's no reason why FT is not autonomous.
Autonomous means standalone observation.
Yeah.
Solar panel. Yeah, that's one of the important milestones for FT. One of the challenge for the FD techniques. Still, it is too much effort to operate or control because of some fail safe, or it is too expensive. So I think we need to establish the standard observation by field measurement. This is a challenging. So yeah, our challenge, yeah.
Are autonomous, right? Already.
Autonomous means charging the solar panel and the batteries. That I think that includes that point. We haven't tried yet. Autonomous means charging the battery and sending the data automatically. That point we haven't. But only data taking that is autonomous. Yeah. But not likely that SDs. SD is automatically sending the information and the charging and the DAQ automatically started. But in the case of the FDs, we need to study the charging the battery and the solar panel and the DAQ, and the wireless communication is not yet done. So yeah.
Because this is needed for what you said, Francesco, the battery, uptime enhancement, right?
Yes,
you can do this with shifters. And now the horizontal uniformity of the atmosphere, you said we need more devices. why are we actually not using inclined laser shots to study this more in depth?
This is a possibility to use in a more efficient way the horizontal laser shots that
Okay, so there was already a good overview of things to try, and there will be more tomorrow about the fluorescence yield, whether we need a new measurement, and totally different designs like the snake array from Piers Polsky, more stereo. And with this, I give over to the surface detector. What do we have? A break?
We have a break. Five minutes.
Okay. So, 5 minute break, that means we reconvene, let's say, 20 past five local time.
And then we discuss if we need an SD.
Well, the fast, you don't need an SD, indeed. Yeah.